Hey everybody, this is Devin Boker. You might notice that this episode is a couple days late. Normally we release on a Friday, but one thing that we like to do whenever possible is let our guest listen to the episode, provide some feedback, make some corrections if needed, you know, that kind of thing. And this is one of those cases where there was something that relatively early on in the episode, and you won't necessarily hear it in its original format because it has been edited. But when we originally recorded it, one of the names that we had used for one of the indigenous peoples of some different Caribbean islands, including Dominica, which plays into the story, and of which the Caribbean is named. Well, the name that we use is outdated. To be clear, what I mean is, it's when you are doing research and when you're looking at things online, it is the name that is most widely used in many things. And so that speaks to a couple of things. It speaks to a lack of cultural knowledge, a lack of understanding, a framing and perspective that is very one-sided. But, you know, that was on us because we didn't do a whole lot of extra digging because we were just looking at things on relatively face value. But nevertheless, it's a name that was pretty much largely used by Europeans. It ended up having dehumanizing, derogatory connotations, was used to, you know, accuse of cannibalism. And in fact, the word cannibalism comes from a combination of a couple words, but comes from that original indigenous name. And so we went back, we did a lot of learning, a lot of research, a lot of reading, and learned some absolutely fascinating history about the island of Dominica, as well as many other Caribbean islands. And we wanted to share that tidbit just because, number one, we thought it was important. Number two, interesting. And number three, because these things, once learned, deserve attention. I feel that many of us, especially if you're listening in the United States, don't really know a whole lot about South America, really any other culture that isn't our own or European or who knows, I don't know, like Australian. And these are places that are, you know, close, very close. Our histories are incredibly intertwined. Our impact felt for generations, hundreds of years. Whether our own individual or that of our ancestors. And so it's important to learn the history. We spend so much time, whether it be in school or pop culture, you know, focusing on medieval or the Renaissance, but very rarely any time focusing on any other culture. It's time that we make that shift. And so we are going to link a couple of things, mainly Wikipedia articles and the episode notes. But we are just encouraging you to take the time to learn about some different Caribbean cultures, South American cultures, indigenous cultures, and cultures that are not, you know, the ones that are already featured in everything else. I think it's fair to say that the average American associates the Caribbean, in particular, with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, or, let's see, Vacation, and not much for the history. A history that is long, storied, fascinating, at times dark, at times inspirational. Complicated is the best way to say it. but it's a history that needs to be learned. So, that's that. That's just the point we wanted to make. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for being understanding of a late episode. And all right, we're gonna get to it. Hey, Richard.
Yes.
You're probably wondering why I didn't see Chelsea out there.
Why not?
Well, she said that she was, you know, gonna kind of take the day and carry a lizard around in her purse. Said it was a personal day. Get it?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey everyone, Devin Boker here.
And Richard Boker.
And you're listening to The Wildlife, a podcast from two brothers that explores nature's untold stories and wild secrets. Before we get into it, a big shout out and I love you to our patrons at patreon.com/thewildlife, our other half of the symbiotic relationship that is us. So the biggest of thank yous to Andrea Lloyd, Chris Trankel, Angela Seibert, Bridget Fitzgerald, Christina Boker, Marie Hancocks, Matt Capel, Megan Gariani, Mike Henry, Vikram Baligi, who, by the way, is the host of the podcast Planthropology. And if you haven't listened to that yet, we highly recommend it. It's a podcast about plants and plant people and how cool they really are. So that's awesome. Also, Whitney Vandeveer, Zach Stednick, April Balinski-Kimia, Kim Jolie, Karen Bergman, and Tara Peterson. We honestly could not do this without you. So thank you so much for supporting both the show and the nonprofit. And also a huge thank you to everyone who's been reviewing our show lately. It helps tremendously with visibility and building our community. And right now, at the time that I'm saying all of this, we are number 23. Not total, but like 23 nature podcasts, like number 20. We are ranked number 23 in nature podcasts, and we're in the top 50 in Canada, Great Britain, Germany, and Australia. So super, super cool. A review that we got just a couple days ago, honestly, it kind of brought a tear in my eye, and it says, "Absolutely delightful. Found this pod through Dr. Pagan, the planarian scientist. When you need to fall in love with the natural world again, listen to this show. Thank you, Of Lies and Hope. You made my day." Today's story starts in Texas. See, as a kid, and honestly as an adult, anytime I'm visiting my parents, a lot of my time has been spent following around these peculiar little green or brown lizards. I call them geckos for years because that's pretty much what they look like. I mean, to the untrained eye, they look like the Geico mascot. They're fun to watch, quicker than you'd expect, super hard to catch, and they do this thing. Sometimes, when you get close enough, you have this moment where you lock eyes with one another. It's motionless, and so are you. You're trying not to scare it away, and then out from its neck comes this fleshy flag, this bright pink and yellow something, and then it disappears again. And then bam, it's back. And while this is happening, the lizard starts doing push-ups. The whole thing's just so bizarre. And they're called?
Anoles.
Borrowed from the French anolis, which was borrowed from the Dominica Island Carib, anole. I've always had my assumptions about these little critters, but I've never been certain. After my last trip down, I started doing some digging and uncovered an unexpectedly fascinating story of adaptation, perseverance, biodiversity, and I needed to talk to somebody about it.
Oh, sorry, hold on.
It's okay.
I decided to binge watch a show last night, so I went to bed a little bit later than normal.
The voice you've been hearing in the back, that is our guest for today. Chelsea Connor, Herper Barbie, a Anole Queen, at least according to her Twitter, where you can follow her at Chelsea Herps. Our conversation, which, by the way, Richard wasn't there for, so a lot of what you're going to hear today is sort of a blending of our older and our more recent format. But anyway, Richard shares a fascination with these critters, so I'm going to be filling him in. But anyway, our conversation is one about change, perspective, adapting, and it's going to be a two-parter. The first half is largely focused on the Knowles, but part two, see, Chelsea is one of the co-founders of Black Birders Week. You might remember the hashtag. I hope you do. It wasn't that long ago. And at Black AF and STEM. And so our conversation in the second half largely revolves around that, and SciComm and art. And at the time, the news that nearly 1 million international students in the U.S. would have to return home if they did not have in-person classes due to COVID. A decision that might be being walked back on, but things are still unclear, and the conversation is important and needed nevertheless. You'll hear part two next week, but for now, drop and give us 50 to assert your dominance while you listen to our conversation with the wonderful Chelsea Connor, a Knoll expert, genius behind hashtag DidYouKnoll, contributor at AnnolAnnals.com, an artist behind the adorable and creative Knoll popsicle stickers that need to be smacked on the back of your laptop immediately. Let's get into it.
Oh, my cat is poking my leg. Hi. He's reaching under the closet door to poke my leg, to say hello, and ask me why he's not in the closet with me right now. Even though he would leave immediately if I let him in. Yep.
They just want to make sure their presence is known. Mine are the same
way. Like, hi, did you forget about me? Did you forget that you had a son outside waiting?
Did you forget that I ate 2 hours ago? Before we get into Knowles, let's be sure to get to know Chelsea. Okay, so it's recording now. So one thing that we always like to ask people right off the bat is about, you know, their background. So have you always been interested in science?
Yeah, I have. Like, from a really young age, I've always been interested in science. Not herpetology, per se.
Herpetology is a word that comes from, like, herpeton, which means reptile or creeping animal. And, of course, ology is, like, the study of. So it's the study of reptiles or the study of, I guess, creeping animals.
I've always been, like I wanted to be a marine biologist, which is a stage that every scientist goes through, and you either stay with it or you don't. And I didn't stay with it because I was like, I don't know how to swim. I think that's a big part of being a marine biologist. I think you need to know how to swim for that.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, never mind. I wanted to be an archaeologist. I wanted to be a paleontologist. And then, like, some point early in high school, I was like, oh, I'll be a vet, which is another point that every animal scientist goes through.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you either stick with that or you don't as well. And I was one of the, nope, I'm going to leave.
What was it about? I've heard a lot of different, you know, different people say, like, oh, yeah. And then I started to go down the vet path, and then, nah. And usually it's something about dissections or feeling really bad for animals or things like that. What was it for you?
Yeah. For me, it was two things. It was the amount of work that I'd have to do. Not that I'm not able to do it,
sure.
But knowing like the fact that I also have to be like putting down animals sometimes.
Yeah.
So I do all of that work.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, then I also would have to be like killing animals.
Yeah, that's hard.
And I'm like, ooh, do I want to put down a dog maybe like every week? I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, that's rough.
It's like, that's not okay with me. I don't know about other people.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
I get that. So at what point did it become herpetology then?
It didn't become herpetology until like, I got to Texas actually.
Okay.
Which, like, It's like some people find what they want to do until like later on, which is completely okay. If you don't know what you want to do, you'll figure it out eventually. But my advisor here, like when I got here, he was like, "Hey, I know your island. I do research on your island." And I'm like, "Really? No one knows my island. Everyone thinks it's the Dominican Republic." Like that's, I always have to tell them that's not what it is.
Right. Yep. Her island is Dominica, nicknamed the Nature Island of the Caribbean. It's a 290 square mile island along a curving group, right between Costa Rica and the mainland. It's got a population of about 72,000, and the history there is a storied one. Originally settled by the Arawak in the 4th century, the indigenous Kalinago people inhabited the island roughly about 100 years later. It was later colonized by the French, who then lost it to Great Britain after the Seven Years' War. Both countries brought enslaved Africans to the island for forced labor on coffee plantations and others. This portion of the island's history is full of violent dehumanization and injustice, and it wasn't until 1978 that the island gained independence as a republic. In fact, the Kalinago have a 3,700-acre portion of the island that is reserved as Kalinago territory, and a modern movement is seeing a preservation and a resurgence in celebration of Kalinago culture and arts and ways of life. Now, you might remember Hurricane Maria, the Category 5 hurricane that basically hit Dominica straight on. It later impacted Puerto Rico, which got a lot of the attention in the news. But Kalinago territory was struck head on, like full force, causing severe damage, leaving the residents in a lot of need. It is the youngest island in the Western Antilles, and in fact, is still being formed by volcanic activity. The island is lush and mountainous and full of rainforests and home to many rare animals and plants and bird species. It truly is a beautiful place. And if you don't know much about it, you should look into it.
And he's like, yeah. So he's like, do you want to go home and do research? And I'm like, you know what? At first I wasn't sure if I could do it. Like, I didn't think people like me could do research because I'm Black, I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, like, I've never seen anyone that looked like me doing it. And at the time I was like, you know, I want to work with animals somehow, and I'm not sure. Yeah. I was like, you know what, maybe this will help me figure out in what capacity I want to work with animals as well. And as you can tell, I now adore animals more than anything.
Yeah, they are.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I really like annuls. They're super, super, super cute to me. Whenever I see them doing their little push-ups, I kind of like will look at them and like bob my head with them and see if they'll like do it back to me.
It's kind of like walking next to a pigeon. You can't help but like, you know, bob a little bit.
They're adorable to me. I would totally get a pet annul.
Or like stick your tongue out and hiss when you walk past a goose, you know? Am I the only one? Okay.
I mean, I've done that before.
I've always been curious. I mean, is that a territorial thing? I guess that's the first question. And the second question is, what is that weird fleshy flag thing called?
So, yeah, it is a territorial thing. That is a male doing a display to try to get you to leave his territory. So he's like, hey, I see you. You don't belong here. Please go away. This is mine. I own it. Like, do you want to fight? Because I'll fight you. And then they extend the dewlap. It's called the dewlap, the flesh flag. it's a little flap of skin, and they have like a muscle that they can extend and retract it with. So
is that like the little barb thing at the front? Is that the muscle, or is that just part of the dewlap?
Yeah, there's a little thing in the front. It's hard to describe it. It'd be easier to, like, show you.
Yeah.
But there is a little, like, thing on the... If you ever hold an anole and you feel it's dewlap, there's a little... You can feel a little thing in the front, and that's what, like, helps them open and close it.
I do think the dewlap is really interesting. I'm glad to finally know what that's called, because I've never had any idea, even though I've seen them so much. It reminds me of like a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Or something like a, what's that one?
Are you talking
Jurassic
like,
Park with the things around that go, but it's like if a dewlap went all the way around, like, instead like a line lizard. Made.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I think, what's kind of funny here is a few minutes ago you said you, when you see the anoles doing their kind of bob and push-up thing, they do it back. And here it turns out that what they're doing is saying, hey, you're in my territory, get out of here. And then you're basically going, hey, you're in my territory, you get out of here. And so you're just having this square off where you're both just like,
well, you get out of
my
here,
territory.
No, well, you get out of here. No, you get out of here.
How does that make you feel that you are basically just kind of, you know, staring down a tiny lizard?
Well, that just entertains me even more. To know that Richard actually is capable of standing up for himself. When someone tells me to get out of their territory, nah, fam. I'm going to bob my head at you and do push-ups.
So here's my question, though. I mean, should we be proud of you for standing up to yourself for a small lizard, or should we be proud of the small lizard for standing up to a giant human?
I mean, definitely proud of the small lizard.
Okay. Good. Because I was going to say, I'm not proud of you for that.
Me either.
So let me ask you this. In Texas, when you see anoles, what do they typically look like? Like how many species would you guess that you see in Texas?
A few. You know, I'm no expert, so I don't know if some of these are just different types of lizards, but you know, some of them will be like tree frog green.
Oh yeah.
Others will be like this dark kind of camo green.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. There's a definitely noticed, like, I don't know, let's say like a half a dozen different looking guys. Sometimes they don't have the dewlap. I don't know if that is like the only the males that have that or.
Okay, now let me ask you this: if you were to guess a specific number, how many species do you think exist of anoles, or that are, how about this, that are identified? Because I know that gets tricky.
How many, like, have been cataloged?
Yeah.
Well, this is a funny question to me because every single time I get asked this, I just highball the heck out of it.
You, like, way overshoot.
Because, I mean...
800,000.
I mean, come on. Like, that's usually how it works, though, right? Like, oh, I've seen five, but there's, like, 500.
I should learn to stop asking you these kinds of questions, but I can't.
There's, okay, there's 500 anoles. Let's just do it.
You got pretty close. You'll find out the actual number right after this break, along with so, so much more.
Hi there from the Hike Hoppers crew. Hike Hoppers' mission is to strengthen the body, feed the mind, and calm the soul by providing outdoor events and programming that connect people to each other, to themselves, and to nature. From women's hiking groups to kids' camps and community events for all, we invite you to visit our website at www.hikehoppers.org for details on the many ways we work to help create happier, healthier communities. See you on the trails!
Did you know that you can listen to your favorite shows ad-free with Stitcher Premium? Like, seriously, like Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, My Favorite Murder, Science Rules with Bill Nye, like all of those ad-free with Stitcher Premium for $4.99 a month if you use promo code THEWILDLIFE at checkout. By the way, also, did you realize that this is episode 56? 56 without Ryan Reynolds as a guest to do the much-needed topic of comparing and contrasting Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, which, by the way, premiered a little over 20 years ago, with real life Wolverines. It's something we need to know. We need to know this stuff. So Ryan, if you are out there listening, we need you. How many species are there?
There's currently 436 accepted species.
Okay, that's way more than I thought.
there's so many anoles. There's so many anoles right now.
Jesus.
And the number is just going to keep changing, I feel like, cuz there's a lot of anoles that haven't that like they live in the forest. Sometimes the forests aren't easily accessible. So I feel like sometimes there's a lot of any species that are just like hanging around waiting to be discovered, and then sometimes they're like in plain sight and we've never even bothered to test them. One of the anoles that I've spoken about for Jeju Anole, Anolis aplitophallus.
Anolis aplitophallus. It's this little brown dude with a yellow dewlap.
It looks really similar to another anole, Anolis limifrons, I think it was. I don't remember. I think it's that one. But upon like catching one of them and everting the hemipene, the researchers noticed that it is significantly larger than the other anole in the area, and they're like, wait a minute. So like, from seeing something like that, they're like, oh, this is a different species. And it is. That's where it got its name, Aplitophallus. So sometimes they're in plain sight, and it takes more research into the animal itself to find out what exactly is going on with it, if it's a subspecies, if it's a new species, if everything matches up with all the other specimens caught in the area. And it seems kind of exhaustive to be like, oh, do we have to catch every single one now?
Right.
It's like, oh God. Like, I don't think you do, but I think noticing behavior is also a really important part of research, noticing behavior and features. So I feel like those are really good practices when you're conducting animal research, to take note of behavior and any external features that you can see. With the one of the anoles that I study, they have four recognized ecotypes. So these four look completely different from each other. And like noticing that and then doing DNA testing, it was found that they don't have enough differences to be subspecies, but they do have that morphological difference, and they do have some differences in DNA. So they're ecotypes. That's where the ecotypes come from.
Oh, geez, that's tricky.
it is tricky. So sometimes it's like an obvious, like, oh, these look different. And then sometimes it's a accidental find. But there's so many. I like just thinking about it. There's so many animals out there, so many things that we are probably missing, and it's so many things that we don't have access to.
Yeah.
That we don't know about. But currently there's 436 species, and maybe, hopefully, definitely there's more.
Like many neotropical species, anoles are masters of adaptation and diversity. Now, of course, we said there's over 400 species. More than 150 of those live on islands, which we know, especially from last week's episode, are kind of biodiversity hotspots. They are the perfect lab, the perfect natural experiment for speciation and for niche partitioning and for expertise and for developing your own superpower and your thing. It's your thing, right? Now, there are species on the mainland, and we'll get to that in a second. The tricky bit is, the island species, for a variety of reasons, tend to be the more well-studied. Not as in, educated. Just so we're clear.
Like, the anoles in Puerto Rico, I know, have been researched a lot. The anole on my island that I'm currently researching has also been researched a lot by other people as well. There's a lot of papers about it. The Anolis oculatus. And then the invasive anole as well, which is originally from Puerto Rico, Anolis cristatalis. Inland anoles need more research. So do Caribbean ones, but when I look up things for my Digio Knoll, I feel like the mainland Knolls are definitely lacking in certain details that I can easily find for what seems like most Caribbean Knolls.
Sure. Like I said, there's kind of a butt ton of reasons, but I mean, you can probably think about it. So an island, it's like a bucket, and things can only get so far in a bucket. Like, you can reach in and grab it. Like, it's going to be on the bottom. It's going to be on the sides. It's in a bucket. But on the mainland, it's like you went from a bucket to, I don't know, the Mall of America. And now you're trying to, like, find something that's super small in the Mall of America when, you know, it blends in with basically everything. Good luck.
There's also, like, they're really good at hiding. Their camouflage is amazing. Yeah. In the right areas, there is the blue anole.
What? I didn't know. I looked up a picture of these blue anoles. Oh my god, they are so cute. And it turns out that they are the only pure blue lizard in the world. And of course, as is tends to always be the case with the wonderful things on the planet, it is in danger of extinction. So,
and oh my gosh, it is so cute and tiny and such a pretty blue, and I want one so bad. I'll help take care of the blue anoles. What can I do? How can I start up a blue anole sanctuary?
Yeah, it's on an island near Colombia. It's called Isla Gorgona, mm-hmm. and it is pure blue, no patterning, and it is surprisingly cryptic, according to researchers who have tried to find it. It's hard to find it up in the canopy. A photographer went to just to get a picture of it, and it took him, I think, like a week and some days or something like that, just to find one to photograph. And it happened to come down the tree, and it was just like at the trunk of the tree at the base. And he's like, oh, finally. And then he took the picture, and then the basilisk came by and was like, sick, lunch, and ate it. So,
oh man. Which I have to say, like, the perfect metaphor for 2020. How many species do you think live in Texas?
I don't know, 200.
Two.
What?
Yeah. So this is what's interesting. There's an incredible diversity. They're still figuring out some of them. Now those ones that you're seeing, what if I were to tell you that dark green one, the light green one, and that brown one you see all could be the exact same species, just color changing?
What, like, at will, like a chameleon sort of thing? Or
not so much like a chameleon, but more like a mood ring.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them do change color. Like you were saying earlier, you're not sure if the anole that you were seeing, if they were the same species. Mm-hmm. So the green anole can turn brown. It can even do, like, it can even look a little yellowish. And it can even do like a green color change, which I haven't seen a lot of. I think I've probably seen like two gray phase anoles, green anoles. I'm sure some people have seen that more than me, but personally, I've only seen two. But there's also a brown anole, which is its name. It's called a brown anole, and it's just always brown. Or it's like really, really dark, like super dark brown. But the green anole can turn brown, which is a point of confusion for people, which is like, it's named the green anole. Why is it brown? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's tricky. Oh, that's just a whole other layer of like trying to identify, and then it changes color on you.
Well, one of the things to look for is like, okay, where in America are you?
Yeah.
And if you're in Florida, you're like, is it a green anole or brown anole? And I think there's like another species of anole that has been introduced to Florida recently too.
When Chelsea listened back to this, she wanted to bring up a point of clarification, and that is there are more than two species of anole, especially introduced species in Florida. And so she sent me a list. And so I'm going to call this segment Devin mispronounces Latin names. Anolis Christatellis. Anolis Sagrai. Anolis Alisoni. Anolis Garmani. Anolis Equestris. And etc. Equestris. Like a horse?
But if it has that pointy head, if it has a long pointy head, that's one of the things to look for. Also, when it like flashes its dewlap, if it's like pink or if it's a bright red, or there are some populations in southwestern Florida that have a gray dewlap, then you're looking at Anolis carolinensis.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. And if it's the brown anole, which is Anolis sagrai, then it's going to have that red and orange dewlap. So it's going to be red, and then on the edge, on the margin, it's going to be orange.
So is that a the color changing thing, is that like a surface dependent kind of thing, like if they're on something green?
Yes. So it depends on their mood and on temperature.
Okay.
So depending on like you said, the surface temperature of the surface, also if they're interacting with another anole or with you, they will do a color change. Sometimes when like I pick up anoles, when I catch them, where my hand will hold them, they would get darker at that spot. It's not a blending in thing. It's a, I'm warning you, or I'm trying to warm up thing.
So you've mentioned a couple times, but you study Anolis oculatus, which is the native species, yes, right? And then there's Anolis Christatellis.
Yeah, it's the endemic species on my island. And then Christatellis, yeah, it's from Puerto Rico. It's the Puerto Rican crested anole. It arrived on my island on a shipment early 2000s. Oh,
okay. So relatively, I guess time's freaking me out. I guess that's not so recently. That's 20 years ago. But still, I mean, relatively recently.
You can still consider that recently.
Yeah. It's how like I always think like the 80s were 20 years ago, but it was 40 years ago. Like, what's happening? But okay. So what's the central focus of your research then? Is it like on the interaction between the native and non-native?
Yes. It's on the dietary niche overlap of the native and invasive species of anole on my island.
Okay, so what that basically means, the dietary niche overlap of the species, it's looking at do the things that these anoles eat overlap? Like, do they have a lot of competition for food?
So we're looking at that interaction between them for prey items. Mm-hmm. So I took fecal samples, and we were almost done for DNA extraction and sequencing, and then can't go into the lab right now because social distancing.
Yeah, that's a bit Camp tricky.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were so close too. It was like, I've already started writing. I'm like, okay, I did this big part here. I don't need the data to do like here's what we did. Here's the procedure.
Right.
Procedure and everything. You just like write that up. And then I'm like, okay, we're waiting for like this many more samples. That's not a lot at all. You can probably have that done like in a week. I'm being hopeful. Just being super, super hopeful. And then everything happened and they're like, well, campus is closed. I'm like,
oh no. That's horrible. The typical story of an invasive or a non-native or a non-indigenous, and there's multiple terms and they kind of have varied meanings, but the typical narrative is you have one animal or plant that's not from the area that suddenly finds itself in the area. And it's usually because, you know, like people, because we travel the world and have boats and planes and bring cargo and all that kind of stuff. And so usually the story goes, this animal or plant that is not from the area enters this new area. And in this new area, it doesn't have all of its traditional predators. It doesn't have all of its traditional things that it
grows in abundance.
Yeah. And so it can grow in abundance. It tends to, it more often than not, you hear the story of, you know, it's out competing local species
because it has no predators,
because it has no predators
and things. Shortage.
Yeah. Now in this case it might be a little bit tricky because it's an anole competing with an anole. It's not like it's zebra mussels competing with, you know, the much larger mussels in Minnesota lakes. It's you know, they're quite similar. My question is, what do you think? Like, what would be your hypothesis right now if you were going to look at the dietary niche overlap between these two species? Would you make the assumption that the non-native species, or that there's a lot of overlap, and maybe that the non-native species is, you know, kind of hedging in on territory and pushing the native species out, or what? What's your thought?
I mean, I don't know, but at first glance, I would say that they seem to all be doing just fine with how abundant they are.
What? So in terms of the dietary overlap then, I mean, what have you found so far? Does it look like there's a lot of competition between the two?
So far, no.
Really?
Which is surprising to some people. But I've lived on the island my whole life, so I've been observing them my whole life. And I realized, I remembered, mm-hmm. like when I went home to do the research, that they occupy different spaces. So I think that might be a factor. And I'm waiting for the rest of the results for me to like, okay, what am I gonna write up here? But Caribbean anoles have ecomorphs. So what that is they're adapted morphologically mm-hmm. to different habitats. So they can be a trunk crown anole, which means that they their preferred habitat is like somewhere midway up the tree trunk to the lower bit of the canopy, or they can be a grass bush anole, which means they're adapted to living in the grass and bush, or trunk ground anole, which is like, again, like mid trunk to like all the way down on the ground. They like hop across rocks, and they hop from the tree trunk to a rock, so they have really long muscular legs for that.
Sure.
And some populations, some ecotypes of Anoles oculatus have a different ecomorph than the invasive anole. So occupying different spaces would give you access to different insects.
Okay. Now that's really cool. They almost sound like this is only coming to my head because my son was watching Pokemon yesterday, but it's almost like Pokemon, like they've got like different specialty, you know, power ups of like the power up for the ground trunk and power up for a pie. And no, that's cool. What do you think it is about anoles that makes them so, because I just feel like them compared to a lot of other things, they at least seem like they're more adaptive, or like they mm-hmm. compartmentalize the environment really well. What do you think that's about with anoles?
So anoles are a really good example of convergent evolution. Dr. Jonathan Losos has he's like written the book on anoles, and he also has this really cool video on, I think, HHMI Interactive.
Oh, I think I've seen it. Yeah.
That shows you like lizards in the evolutionary tree. Mm-hmm. So in Puerto Rico, you can see this very actively. The lizards partition their habitat. So some live at the very top of the canopy, and then some live all the way on the bottom. And they all manage to survive without out competing each other and anybody like going extinct,
mm-hmm.
Because they're at those different levels, competing within their species rather than with other species. It's, how would I describe this? One of the things that drew me to anoles is how adaptive they are, and to be quite honest, I don't think any other species is as interesting. With that, I please don't at me.
No, I think that's
please do
I
not
think
at me. I don't
acceptable.
Want any smoke. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. I like my sunny species. Please.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think I agree with you. At least from what I've seen, I mean they're pretty freaking cool. I mean there's just so much like variance in. Yeah, they just seem to make it almost wherever. And
right, there's even a false chameleon anoles, and
really
they even have like the independently moving eyes and everything.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool.
They're also called snail eating anoles because they eat snails.
Oh,
it's really cool.
Oh
yeah, they do look a lot like chameleons. There's like please don't at me if I'm wrong. I'm not very well versed up how many false chameleon species are, but I know there's more than one.
Oh, okay.
Species. I know there's Barbatus, and there's another one. I think it's Porcus that I. Those are the two that I'm remembering. Mm. I believe there's more. I think there's five. Yeah, there's five. I'm gonna be confident. There's five. There's at least five. And they have that, they're capable of the independent eye movement. There we go. Just found it. Yes, I was right. There are five.
Sweet. Okay. Well, I mean, even that we can definitively say, anoles are the coolest. I'm just gonna throw
they
that
are they can even be chameleons. Why would you need chameleons anymore? Please don't tell Fajita I said that. I have a chameleon. Don't tell her I said that.
One of the more emotionally scarring moments of my childhood was the first time that I grabbed an anole by the tail, and then it ran, and then the tail was still in my hand. And it's kind of like, you know, ever since talking to Dr. Pagan, that's wholly unimpressive compared to flatworms, but it's still like a really interesting survival tactic. Like, I'm just going to drop my
awesome.
Tail here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Imagine just like someone's trying to mug you and they grab you by the arm and you just run off. And they're just holding an arm. You're like, bro, what?
Hey, Costa.
Hello?
That mugging costs you an arm. And maybe
cost
a leg.
Me an arm and a leg.
Cost me an arm and a leg. You got like the little tiny arm sticking out. And a little
it would
tiny
have been
leg.
Cheaper to just give him my wallet.
Sorry, I can't come into work. I was mugged and my arm. I had to drop my arm at the scene.
Yo, boss. My arm fell off.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, I say that was emotionally scarring, but I'm pretty certain like the following year I had found a dead anole. And I had like all these like, you know, big thick test tube things and stuff for like collecting bugs. And I remember this very distinctly. I put the anole in one of those tubes and then I filled it with ants and I put the lid on and I set it in the windowsill and I sat and watched it to see how long it would take for the ants to just completely clear away the anole.
How old were you?
That was when we lived in Katy, so like six.
I don't know if I should think that's fascinating or highly disturbing.
I don't know. And I mean, it didn't really work out in the way that I thought, because obviously ants, the way that they work is like they take little pieces and they bring it back to the nest. And they take a little piece and they bring it back to the nest. It's not like they're just like sitting there like eating the whole thing. So
like
it ended up just being
piranhas.
Like ants just chewing all over this anole and then like trying to walk around and carrying anole pieces. It was kind of disturbing. So I remember then I opened it up and set it outside and then they started like clearing away parts of the anole. But then they like must have found something better, because then they were just like, why would I eat this anole when I could eat? Yeah, it was a whole thing. I did the same thing with the grasshopper before.
By the time you let them out.
That was after watching Bug's Life. Put a grasshopper in a tube. Put some ants in there.
How many of these experiments did you run, Devin?
You know, several. A few. A bit.
A bit.
A bit.
A bit.
A bit.
A bit.
Do they regrow?
I can see how that can be emotionally devastating. Yes, they do. They do regrow their tails.
How do they do that? Oh. Okay, so that the whole tail thing, it brings up a good point. If you are somebody studying anoles out in the field, and you have to collect them, capture them, and do whatever you need to do, how do you do that? Because in my experience, trying to catch an anole, it's kind of hard. They're really, really fast. It usually results in a loss of a tail. It's tricky. So how would you think that they catch anoles? Oops. How would you think that they catch anoles?
I don't know, man. Good reflexes.
they just have to be like, that's like a prerequisite or on like the job application for their, do you have cat like reflexes?
Just keep trying to snatch them.
Imagine that would take a really long time.
I mean, what are you supposed to do? Get some fly paper and just like, whoops.
Well, see, my first thought was, yes, catching them by hand. Then my second thought was, you know, some kind of like cage thing that they crawl into and then they can't get out, you know, something like that. Neither one of those. And you're going to love this.
Yeah. So I use a lasso. It's a loop on basically a fishing pole, a loop on a fishing pole, basically. So I'm kind of technically fishing for lizards. And then I, when I get them in hand, once I've gotten the loop around them and I pull, it doesn't hurt them at all. Cause I get that question a lot. It doesn't hurt them. I promise. They're fine. They're angry cause they didn't want to be caught, but they're fine. Oh, yeah.
So while Richard and I are sitting here, I just looked up a video of one of these because I just had to see, and she's like not even, okay, it's literally like a stick with like a fishing line lasso on the end. So we just watched this video of like this guy just lassoing a lizard. It's kind of the greatest thing I've seen in a while.
I'm just in complete disbelief right now.
I mean, it's clever, and I see why you would do that. I mean, it's probably the easiest thing to do, but, like, I don't know. When you think about somebody gathering lizards, like, the last thing that you think about is a lasso. I love it.
Cowboys of the Wild West likes to practice on anoles before they graduated to cows.
Lizard lassoing. For some reason, I want to imagine, like, you know, like, snakes. I mean, if they had arms, it would, like, you know, try to lasso lizards or, like, birds. You know, up in a tree, like, lassoing down a lizard and pulling it up to eat it.
Who do you know that knows how to lasso?
I don't know a single person that knows how to lasso.
Also don't know anybody that can use fly paper like a whip. I guess we won't get any anoles.
Fly paper, like, is that, like, a thing? Are you saying, like, that's a way to catch anoles?
It's my idea for catching anoles.
Oh, okay.
I avoid touching their tails because I don't want them to lose their tails at all. Because they need that because they need to escape from a real predator. So
that was a way better answer than I was expecting. a fishing lasso. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. So, but Aaron's on Twitter is Aaron McGee Lizard Lassoer. So it's a serious thing.
So
I went hiking with him the other day and I saw a lizard in the distance. And I was like, oh my God, look at this lizard. But there was like a patch of poison ivy so I couldn't get close to it. I was like, if I had my lasso.
It's just something that most people would never think of. But no, that's really cool.
Yeah, I kind of stood there angrily for a while. I was like, look at it. It's so close. I could just reach out and grab it if there was not this poison ivy. Yeah. But
so what do you think is the what is the most interesting thing? Is it the adaptiveness or is there something else?
It's the adaptive. It's a lot of things. It's the adaptiveness. It's the range of colors that they have and the colors of their dewlaps as well. And like anole behavior. I like watching anoles do their threat displays. And flash their dewlaps. I think that's really amazing to see. Also like I'm not sure how to say this, so I'm just gonna stick with what I already said.
Okay. No problem. What, so,
sorry, my brain just like, my brain went, no, you don't need to know how to say that. Yeah. Never mind.
That happens to me regularly. I get it. teaching, especially, that's always when it happens. And it's, you know, the worst possible time. But so your hashtag
there. when I had to teach back home, because while I was doing my research, my data collection for my research,
yeah,
I was teaching and they'd ask me questions. I'd be like, I know the answer to this. I just don't know how to explain it to you.
Sometimes that's the hardest part. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. It took a while to figure it out, how to like explain it so that they'd understand. But for a while I was like, kid.
Yeah.
How do I explain niches in an easy way?
Yeah. I feel weird mentioning this now because I literally in our last episode mentioned like the same thing, but I heard it once before and I don't remember where, so I can't really give them credit, but I heard it once before about how often trying to explain things, especially science, but really honestly a lot of things like social issues and politics and everything. It's a lot like when you like tap a pencil and you're like playing a song in your head and you're tapping the pencil to the song and like you can hear it and you know what you're playing, but like to everybody else it just sounds like random tapping.
Yeah.
And you have to try to figure out like
how do I
help you figure out the song that I'm playing when I'm randomly tapping a pencil. it's tricky sometimes, but
yeah, that's one of the things with doing SciComm is that I've learned a lot of ways to explain things to people, especially about annuls.
Yeah.
And I'm limited to a certain amount of characters too. So it's like, What is the best way to explain this concept in this tweet?
Yeah.
But not like, I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to give people the wrong idea.
Yeah.
But I would like them to understand it. I can do more in a second tweet. I can go more in depth. Mm-hmm. But like, what's a good way to be like, hey, basically, here the thing is. Like, I've described Amplexus as a sexy amphibian hug, which I'm like, that's actually right. I'm 100% correct. It is a sexy amphibian hug.
Amplexus is a mating behavior. It's where the male grasps the female with his front legs. You've probably seen it before. The smaller male on the larger female and kind of like gives her a hug, but at the same time, he's fertilizing the eggs while they come out of her body. That's what that is.
But like... Would I have thought of that like a couple years ago before I started doing any of this?
Yeah.
No, somebody would have asked the plexus and I'm like, oh man, I don't even know how to explain that. Like, so now somebody's like, what is Amplexus? And I'm like, oh, well, sexy amphibian hug. There you go.
and it gets the point across. It works.
Yeah. And then you elaborate and you go, okay, so here's what they do when Amplexus is initiated. Mm-hmm. And then there's different like positions they can hold on to. So it's like different types of Amplexus. And then like, oh, okay, that's really cool. Thank you for explaining. But they're not going to forget the sexy amphibian hug.
Yeah, no way.
So they're going to remember that.
Yep. Well, and it's good cuz it's like it's the hook, you know. Then they're curious like, "Okay, what
they're like,
what are you talking amphibian about?
Tell me more. What do you mean? Why is it huh?"
Well, you do a really good job of it. I always really enjoy your stuff and like the hashtag did you annul is great. When did you start that?
So one of my best friends, mm-hmm. Helped me come up with that because I like DM'd her frantically. I already knew that I knew I wanted to do annul tweets and I already had like one drafted out and I was like, oh man, I don't know what to call it though. Cause if I'm going to do this regularly, I have to call it something. I can't avoid not calling it anything. And I'm like, I gave her a couple ideas, which sucked, so I'm not going to repeat them. And then she's like, well, okay, I see what you're trying to do. What about did you annul? And I'm like,
it's punny. Oh, I like it.
Why didn't I come up with that? And I was like, great, I'm taking it. And I was like, bye, thank you.
Mine now.
But I'm really passionate about Annals, and I love like helping other people learn things. That's something that I discovered when I was teaching my students during my my research trip.
Mm-hmm.
I like doing that. I like sharing information. I like seeing people's faces when they realize things. I like being able to answer questions for people, and if I don't know the answers, which is completely okay, we can like figure it out together.
Yeah,
and that's also a lot of fun.
Right, it is.
And it's like, oh, I really like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see enough people like tweeting about Annals besides Dr. Losos, and I like, you know, I should just tweet about Annals. I'm just gonna tweet about Annals. I'm doing it. I'm doing the tweets.
Yeah.
It's happening. And now, Did You Annals also now on Annul Annals, which is like the Annul website. If you guys don't know what Annul Annals is, please check it out. It is annulannals.org, and I know those two sound like the same word, but I promise you they're not. It's Annulannals. Dot org. And if you want any information on Annals, like that's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have Twitter somehow, which is okay, you can check out Did You Annul on Annul Annals now.
Perfect. I also your stickers. They're awesome.
The stickers.
I love them. Like when did you start drawing and when did you start making those?
I have been drawing a long, long time, Devon. It's been a long time that I've been drawing. probably since I was like 12-ish.
Sure.
I think about 12.
Yeah. Which makes
but
sense.
The Annul stickers were a recent thing.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend about and their Twitter handle is at Give Bats a Break.
Mm-hmm.
They love bats, if you couldn't tell. Go check out their Twitter. But he kept saying, every time I post a picture of a Annul or a gush about Annul, he kept saying that their dewlaps are like really pretty and candy colored and they look like popsicles. And he's like, why do Annuls have such pretty dewlaps? And I was like, first of all, because they're the best lizard. Okay. Point blank. Second of all, you have a good point. And then I drew the first one, which I drew it kind of as a joke. I was like, oh, it'd be funny to see what this looks like. Let me just pick a really absurdly bright dewlap and see what he thinks.
Yeah.
So I did Annulus Uniformis, which has a pink dewlap with like purple streaking and then like a purple dot mm-hmm. in the middle of it. And that was my very first one. And I showed it to him. I was like, look at this. And he's like, oh, that looks really cool. And I was like, yeah, it does actually. And I showed it to my friends, Black AF and STEM Collective. I like shared it with them. I was like, hey guys, what do you think? And they're like, oh, that's really cool. And I got like some feedback on like how to make it clearer what the Annul is. Cause at first it was just a popsicle. And Aaron was like, what if you like make it more clear what the Annul is so that people get it? It like kind of like the idea meshes a bit better. I'm like, you have mm-hmm. a good point. I'm just going to draw the Annul on the popsicle. And I did that. And then I was like, actually, what if I, would you guys buy stickers of this? If I did more of these, would you guys buy stickers of this? And they're like, heck yeah. And I was like, okay, well then I guess I'm doing this too now. So
yeah. Well, I
so
love
now
them.
I thank you.
Yeah, they're really
now
really
I draw
good.
Annul stickers. they're so much fun to draw.
I just like that and now I draw Annul stickers. That's awesome.
I feel like that's happened. That's how a lot of things happen for me. Like I did one thing and now I'm like, well, and now I do this.
That's life. That's how it goes.
Now, these stickers really are super, super cool. I mean, I don't know. They're just really creative. They're really, really creative and colorful, and I love them. So if you want one, you can get them at chelseaherps.redbubble.com. We're also going to be giving away some over the next week or so. And also, she actually, since talking to her, she started her own Patreon. So, you know, like we have a Patreon. She has a Patreon now. We'll put a link for it in the episode notes, but I strongly suggest you go on. You can support her for as little as a dollar a month to help her, you know, as a student, as an artist, as a science communicator, as a person. And if you're interested, her Venmo link is Chelsea ACC. So you could drop her another bonus, you know, a gift. Like we said, at the top, this is a two-parter. So next week, we're going to dive more into some other topics. We're going to talk about Black Birders Week, Black AF and STEM, and the complicated.
Well, what would that mean for you?
I don't know what I'd do.
So parts of it get kind of heavy. But it's important, and it's a conversation that's needed. And so next week, be on the lookout, because it's worth it. That's for sure. Anyway, thank you for listening today. Be sure to follow Chelsea Connor at Chelsea Herps on Twitter. Follow Black AF and STEM. Look at the hashtag. Look at the hashtag for Black Birders Week, because of Black Birders Week. Lots of really, really good stuff. The other people that she shouted out, be sure to follow them as well. Really great science communicators are doing some amazing work. Make sure to follow hashtag Did You Annul. We used the more you annul with the rainbow, like reading rainbow. But yeah. Hashtag did you annul, because it's just a plethora of annul facts. And like, you've probably gone your whole life being like, annuls, what's an annul? Are you sure it's not pronounced annoli? Wait, are we talking about guacamole? No, we're talking about lizards. They're called annuls. They're really, really cool. And I promise you, once you start learning about them, you're going to be obsessed. They're just so, they're everything. Thank you for listening. I'm Devin Boker. This is The Wildlife. Remember, we are member and listener supported. You can support us at paypal.me/thewildlife or patreon.com/thewildlife for as little as a dollar a month. Right now, we're trying to get to a goal of 400 per month on Patreon, because that's really going to enable us to take our initiatives off of the ground and into, you know, the stars. You know, our Binoculars for Young Birders program, our grant programs for people who are looking to do, you know, cover conference fees or unpaid internships, and then our field trip fund, among a whole bunch of other things like more community programs, educational materials, all that. So if you're interested, you can find more information there, patreon.com/wildlife. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, everyone.